Imagine a world where fairy tales collide with advanced technology, where Rapunzel is a computer genius trapped in a satellite orbiting Earth, and Cinderella is a cyborg mechanic with a mysterious past. This is the universe of Kress, the third installment in Marissa Meyer's best-selling Lunar Chronicle series. Since its publication in 2014, this series has captivated millions of readers worldwide, with Kress frequently cited as a fan favorite for its perfect balance of action, romance, and character development. Even celebrities like Emma Watson have praised Meyer's innovative reimagining of classic fairy tales in a dystopian future. The series has been translated into over 30 languages and has solidified Meyer's reputation as one of the most creative voices in young adult science fiction today. As we dive into this thrilling continuation of Cinder's revolution against the tyrannical Lunar Queen Lavanna, prepare to be transported to a world where the line between human and machine blurs, and where the most powerful weapon might just be the truth. High above Earth orbits a satellite. Not just any satellite, but a prison for a young lunar girl named Kress. For 7 years, she has been confined to this technological cage, her only company, a small AI companion she programmed herself. Her crime? Being born a shell, a lunar without bioelectrical manipulation abilities, and possessing extraordinary hacking skills that Queen Lavanna exploits through her thaumaturge, Mistress Sybil. Kress's daily existence is a careful performance designed to please her captor. When Sybil visits to collect blood samples and check on her progress tracking the fugitive cyborg Lynn Cinder, Kress walks a dangerous tightrope. Despite creating sophisticated surveillance systems that have helped Luna monitor Earth, work that has indirectly led to thousands of deaths, Sybil focuses only on Kress's failures, threatening dire consequences if she doesn't locate Cinder soon. Yet behind this facade of obedience lies a secret rebellion. Kress has been actively protecting Cinder's ship, the Rampion, by scrambling signals and redirecting surveillance satellites. She's compiled extensive files on Cinder, Emperor Kai, and her personal favorite subject, Captain Carswell Thorne. Through her research, she's constructed an elaborate fantasy around Thorne, transforming his criminal record into evidence of a compassionate hero, a man who released a sad tiger from a zoo at age 8, stole to raise money for charity, and defended girls from bullies. In her isolation, Thorne has become the dashing hero of her imagination, the man who might someday rescue her from her tower. This technological Rapunzel's hair may be impractically long from years without cutting, but her mind is sharp and her fingers nimble on the keyboard. Her satellite prison represents both her captivity and her power, for while she is physically confined, her digital reach extends throughout Earth and Luna systems. As she monitors the movements of the Rampion crew, she dreams not just of freedom, but of belonging, of finding her place in a world she's only ever observed from afar. Aboard the stolen military cargo ship Rampion, an unlikely crew of rebels prepares for their most daring mission yet. Lynn Cinder, a gifted mechanic, escaped convict, and secretly the long-lost lunar princess Selene, trains relentlessly with Wolf, a genetically modified lunar soldier struggling to master her bioelectrical manipulation abilities. These lunar gifts allow her to control others' minds, but she must learn to use them while remaining aware of her physical surroundings, a challenge that could mean life or death in the coming confrontation. The crew's dynamic reveals both their strengths and vulnerabilities. Wolf and Scarlet share a complex relationship, with Scarlet drawn to him despite lingering fears about the monster she once saw him become in battle. Their tender moments of care, Scarlet applying healing salve to Wolf's wounds, contrast with the violence of their circumstances. Meanwhile, Captain Carswell Thorne provides comic relief with his roguish charm, while the ship's android personality, Iko, offers unwavering loyalty and enthusiasm. Their plan is audacious. Infiltrate the royal wedding between Emperor Kai and Queen Lavanna in 15 days, announce Cinder's true identity as Princess Selene, and demand Lavanna relinquish the crown. It's a desperate gambit, but with Earth's governments conducting sting operations against lunar special operatives and the discovery that these operatives have been harvesting ID chips from plague victims to blend into society, the stakes couldn't be higher. The crew debates assassination versus exposure as they consider how to neutralize Levana. They recognize the danger of her mind control abilities and the risk to Kai, ultimately resolving to expose her as a fraud and murderer to the world. Their mission becomes even more urgent when they learn from news reports that governments are conducting raids against lunar operatives hiding on Earth, a sign that tensions between the two worlds are escalating toward conflict. This makeshift family of fugitives carries the weight of two worlds on their shoulders. Each member brings unique skills and personal motivations to their shared goal, preventing Levana's domination of Earth and Luna. Their camaraderie, forged through shared dangers and mutual respect, will be tested as they move from planning to action in the most high-stakes confrontation yet. When Cress makes contact with the Rampian crew, revealing she's been their invisible guardian by jamming radar signals and redirecting surveillance satellites, they immediately recognize both her value and vulnerability. Learning she's been imprisoned alone on a satellite for 7 years, they decide to rescue her, not just for her technical abilities, but because it's the right thing to do. This decision sets in motion a chain of events that will change everything. The rescue mission turns disastrous when Mistress Sybil discovers Cress's betrayal. Despite Cress's desperate attempt to hide an incoming message from the Rampian, Sybil sees through her lies and violently confronts her. When Thorne boards the satellite, he walks into a trap. The girl he encounters transforms into Sybil, who uses her lunar glamour to freeze him in place. Meanwhile, Cress is bound and gagged, her long hair tangled in her bindings. In a cruel twist, Sybil alters the satellite's trajectory, sending it falling toward Earth with Cress and Thorne trapped inside. She mockingly claims she's granting Cress's greatest wish by sending her to Earth, then departs with Thorne's podship. On the Rampian, Cinder, Wolf, and Scarlet spot the approaching lunar royal ship too late. When what appears to be an injured Thorne returns requesting dock access, Cinder investigates despite Wolf's warnings, only to be attacked as Thorne transforms into a lunar guard. The ensuing battle is chaotic and devastating. Wolf is shot and falls under Sybil's control, turning against Cinder. Scarlet arrives with a gun but hesitates to shoot with Wolf protecting the thaumaturge. In an unexpected turn, the lunar guard shoots Sybil in the leg, weakening her control over Wolf. As Sybil escapes in a podship, she kidnaps Scarlet using glamour to trick Cinder into thinking she's rescued her friend. The aftermath leaves the crew fractured. Wolf critically wounded, Thorne presumed dead, and Scarlet kidnapped to Luna. The mysterious lunar guard who shot Sybil offers unexpected help, revealing he knows Cinder's true identity as Princess Selene and declaring, "I serve my princess, no one else." With no other options, Cinder directs them to Africa, to Dr. Erland, who might help Wolf and provide sanctuary as they regroup from this devastating blow. The satellite crashes in a vast desert, leaving Cress and a now-blind Thorne stranded with limited supplies. As they emerge from the wreckage, Cress experiences her first glimpse of Earth, the boundless golden-orange desert stretching to the horizon under an impossibly blue sky. After a lifetime confined in her satellite, the immensity of Earth terrifies her, making her feel insignificant and triggering a panic attack. Thorne, despite his blindness, steadies her with practical advice about desert survival and the reminder that dehydration is the number one killer in deserts. Their journey across the scorching dunes becomes a test of both physical endurance and character. Thorne fashions makeshift shoes for Cress from towels and hair rope while she guides him across the treacherous terrain. Despite his blindness, he maintains his composure and focuses on practical survival, while Cress finds moments of wonder in her first earthly sunset and stargazing. To manage her fear, she imagines herself as an explorer on an adventure, giving her the courage to continue. As they walk through the night, Cress shares her life story, how she was born a shell on Luna, saved from infanticide by Mistress Sybil, raised in lava tube dormitories with other shells, and eventually placed in the satellite after demonstrating her hacking abilities. She explains how she became fascinated with Earth and decided to protect its people from Lavanna rather than simply spying on them. Thorn listens with surprising patience and compassion, revealing layers beneath his roguish exterior. Their journey grows increasingly desperate as water dwindles and the sun intensifies. When Cress spots what appears to be an oasis with water and trees, she races toward it, only to discover it's a mirage. Devastated, she collapses onto the sand. Thorn creates a makeshift shelter with their parachute and comforts her, promising they'll survive, find civilization, contact the Rampian, and ultimately overthrow Lavanna. In a moment of feverish delirium, Cress confesses her love for Thorn, who gently dismisses her feelings as the result of him being the first man she's ever met. When she laments that she'll die without ever being kissed, Thorn promises solemnly that he won't let her die without a kiss worth waiting for, but insists they must continue their journey. His sincerity gives her the resolve to stand despite her painful, possibly infected feet. Their salvation comes unexpectedly when they encounter desert traders who offer food, water, and transportation to the nearest town. Thorn smoothly invents a cover story that they're newlyweds whose honeymoon was ruined by thieves. This unlikely partnership, forged through mutual dependence and growing respect, transforms both characters, Cress finding strength she never knew she possessed, and Thorn revealing depths of compassion beneath his cavalier facade. While Cress and Thorn struggle in the desert and Cinder regroups with her remaining crew, Scarlet experiences the horror of captivity on Luna. She finds herself the property of Venerable Anotel and his family, particularly their 8-year-old son, Master Charlson, who uses her to practice his lunar gift. The boy creates horrific hallucinations, spiders crawling up her nose, snakes winding through her body, centipedes in her skull. Though Scarlet knows these torments are illusions, her body and brain remain convinced, making the torture no less real. Her suffering intensifies when she's brought before Queen Lavanna and Sybil Mira for interrogation about Cinder's whereabouts. Defiant despite her weakened state, Scarlet reveals her connection to Michel Benoit, who hid and protected a little girl years ago, clearly implying Princess Celine. This enrages Lavanna, though she maintains her composure. To extract information, Sybil uses her lunar gift to force Scarlet to grab a hatchet and place her hand on a chopping block. As Scarlet insists she doesn't know Cinder's location, Sybil prepares to make her cut off her own finger. The scene is interrupted by a quiet voice asking for Scarlet as a pet. When Lavanna refuses, saying the princess can have her when they're finished, the mysterious voice insists she wants Scarlet unbroken, murmuring that father would have given her to me. Lavanna harshly reminds the princess that a queen must follow through on threats or invite anarchy. With that, she signals Sybil to proceed, and the hatchet drops. Later, Scarlet awakens in a lunar menagerie, missing a finger and confined to a cage near a white wolf. A stunningly beautiful lunar girl with 3 tear-like scars on her face appears, claiming to be her new best friend, though pretending to be her master. The girl, revealed to be Princess Winter, Lavanna's stepdaughter, exhibits signs of mental instability, speaking of palace walls that bleed and asking about someone named Jacin Clay. Winter reveals she hasn't used her glamour since age 12, which is why she's going mad, a crucial insight into the consequences lunars face when they refuse to use their bioelectrical gifts. Scarlet's captivity provides a chilling glimpse into lunar society, its casual cruelty, the power imbalances created by bioelectrical manipulation, and the strange beauty and madness that permeate the court. Through her suffering, we gain vital information about Luna that will prove crucial to Cinder's revolution, while the introduction of Princess Winter hints at potential new alliances in the struggle against Lavanna. In the small oasis town of Farafra, Northern Africa, Dr. Erlin treats Wolf's wounds while arguing with Cinder about strategy. He criticizes her plan to interrupt Kai's wedding as naive, insisting they must focus on getting Cinder to Luna itself, as Earth's opinion matters little to lunar citizens who would need to support her claim to the throne. More alarmingly, he reveals that Leetamosis is mutating and lunars may no longer be immune, a terrifying revelation for everyone present, as they're all lunar. The doctor explains that Farafra's population is 15% lunar, with refugees having settled there for generations. The Earthens and lunars live harmoniously, with many lunars having nursed the sick during the plague outbreaks. This community represents a potential model for Earth-lunar relations, one based on cooperation rather than fear and domination. Meanwhile, Kress and Thorn arrive in Kufra, a vibrant trading city sprouting from the desert, surrounded by stone walls with a lake running through its center. After recovering from heat exhaustion in a hotel, Kress discovers their satellite crash has been reported on the news. Authorities are searching for lunar fugitives who survived the wreckage. Before she can contact the Rampian, she's kidnapped by the desert traders who saved them, revealing a darker purpose: trafficking lunar shells on the black market. In a shocking twist, Kress is sold to none other than Dr. Erland himself, who immediately takes a blood sample. When she attacks him and flees, she discovers a net screen revealing his true identity, the fugitive who helped Cinder escape prison. As she processes this revelation, she fails to notice Wolf awakening behind her. Their confrontation leads to the realization that they're actually allies, just as Thorn arrives blindfolded to rescue her. The most profound revelation comes when Dr. Erland discovers Kress is his long-lost daughter, Crescent Moon, taken by Thaumaturge Mira after being identified as a shell. This emotional reunion is immediately shadowed by tragedy. Dr. Erland has contracted Leetamosis and must quarantine himself. He reveals the disease is biological warfare created by Luna 16 years ago to weaken Earth and create dependency on their antidote. In their brief final moments together, father and daughter share a heartbreaking farewell, with Kress too overwhelmed to say "I love you" back before Cinder pulls her away. These revelations reshape our understanding of the conflict between Earth and Luna. The plague that has devastated Earth was deliberately engineered as a weapon, with Queen Levana exploiting the suffering to gain political advantage. Dr. Erland's discovery that Shell's blood contains antibodies explains why they're valuable, not just politically disposable, but medically exploitable. Family connections thought severed are restored, only to be broken again by death, highlighting the personal cost of this interplanetary conflict. With the royal wedding just days away, Cinder's crew formulates a daring plan: kidnap Emperor Kai before Levana can become Empress. Their ultimate goal is to travel to Luna and incite rebellion against Levana, with Kai as both leverage and ally. Kress, now with her long hair cut short, will disable palace security with Wolf as protection, while Cinder and Iko will find Kai. Jocelyn will pilot their escape. On the morning of the royal wedding, Cinder's first task is visiting her former home to steal Adria's wedding invitation. Inside, she's struck by the sight of Peony's cremation urn, a painful reminder of her stepsister's death from Leetamosis. When Adria speaks contemptuously of her cyborg ward, Cinder loses control and uses her lunar gift to force feelings of guilt and shame into Adria's mind. Under this manipulation, Adria admits that perhaps Cinder could have belonged if only she had been normal. After releasing her grip on Adria's emotions, Cinder faces a terrible realization in the elevator mirror. Manipulating Adria's emotions for personal satisfaction is exactly something Queen Levana would do. The palace infiltration proceeds with military precision. Iko blends in with rental escort droids serving at the wedding. Kress and Wolf enter as guests, using forged invitations identifying them as Mr. Samine Bristol and his young wife. Cinder leads Thorn and Dr. Erland through the Emperor's escape tunnel beneath the palace, a vast labyrinth designed to shelter the entire government in crisis. After Kress disables all palace security systems from the control center and Wolf neutralizes numerous guards, Cinder and Iko reach Kai's quarters. They tranquilize him and remove his tracking chips, with Cinder telling Torin they found Princess Celine, who will reclaim Luna's throne. Torin warns that if anything happens to Kai, he'll hunt Cinder down himself. Their escape to the rooftop is interrupted by Mistress Sybil, who takes control of Wolf and turns him against them. In the ensuing battle, Iko is severely damaged, and Cinder's fury reaches a breaking point. Rather than focusing on Wolf, she targets Sybil directly, probing for vulnerabilities in the Thaumaturge's bioelectrical field. This mental attack leaves Sybil screaming and convulsing on the ground, driven to madness by Cinder's power. The crew escapes with the unconscious Emperor Kai aboard the Rampion, but their victory is tempered by the knowledge that they've left Jason behind as a prisoner, and that Cinder's mental attack on Sybil crossed a moral line. The kidnapping represents both their most successful mission and a troubling escalation in the conflict, one that will have immediate and far-reaching consequences. When Kai awakens aboard the Rampion, he's furious about being kidnapped during a looming war and demands to be returned to Earth immediately. Cinder refuses, insisting she had no choice. Their heated argument gradually softens as Cinder reveals they found Princess Celine, Lavanna's rightful replacement. When he asks to meet her, Cinder nervously admits the truth. "It's me, Kai. I'm Princess Celine." Rather than being repulsed by her cyborg nature, Kai is fascinated, particularly by her synthetic eyes with their retina display. The tension between them builds until Kai kisses her, sending her system into overdrive with increased dopamine and endorphins. But their moment is interrupted by devastating news. Lavanna has massacred the people in Forafra who helped them. Cinder confesses her deepest fear. "I'm scared, Kai. Everyone expects me to be strong and brave, but I don't know what I'm doing." She worries she's becoming like Lavanna, having manipulated people and even tortured a Thaumaturge. Kai comforts her, insisting she's nothing like her aunt. "The people of Luna don't need a princess," he tells her. "They need a revolutionary." Their moment is interrupted by worse news. Lunar ships are invading Earth everywhere, with genetically modified soldiers attacking like predators. With all six countries declaring war and Torin temporarily leading the Commonwealth, Cinder realizes there's no time to waste. "I'm going to Luna," she declares, "and I'm going to start a revolution." Meanwhile, Queen Lavanna reveals the full extent of her villainy to the dying Dr. Erland. She admits her parents' team created Latomasis and her sister's team perfected the antidote, while she implemented it by allowing infected lunars to escape to Earth. This biological warfare was designed to bring Earth to its knees, then offer the miraculous antidote she had all along. As Dr. Erland dies whispering a lullaby to his lost daughter, Lavanna vows that no one will take her throne. She is the rightful queen of Luna, Earth, and the entire galaxy. The stage is set for the final confrontation. Cinder has assembled her unlikely crew, a blind thief with unexpected depths, a shell hacker with newfound courage, a wolf hybrid soldier mourning his captured love, and an android with a uniquely human personality. Together, they face impossible odds against Lavanna's vast resources and ruthless determination. But they have something Lavanna lacks, genuine loyalty born of compassion rather than fear, and a leader who questions her own power rather than reveling in it. As the Rampion heads toward Luna, carrying Earth's kidnapped emperor and Luna's rightful heir, the revolution has already begun. The question remains whether Cinder's compassion will be her greatest strength or her fatal weakness in the coming conflict. The fate of two worlds hangs in the balance as Cinder embraces her destiny not as a princess in a fairy tale, but as a revolutionary fighting for freedom. Throughout Cress, Marissa Myers skillfully subverts fairy tale conventions while honoring their emotional core. Each character faces moments where they must choose who they want to be, rather than accepting the roles assigned to them by birth or circumstance. Cress, our Rapunzel figure, begins the story literally trapped in a tower, her satellite, with impractically long hair. Yet unlike the passive princess of folklore, she actively works to protect Earth from Luna's surveillance and reaches out to Cinder's crew for rescue. When stranded in the desert, she transforms from a sheltered dreamer into a survivor. Her romantic notions about Thorne evolve from fantasy to something more authentic as she sees both his flaws and his genuine kindness. Thorne himself undergoes significant growth, from self-serving criminal to someone who sacrifices for others. When he shares his water with Cress in the desert or risks his life to rescue her from kidnappers despite his blindness, we see the hero emerging from the rogue. His admission that his childhood heroics were self-serving shows his growing honesty, while his promise to give Cress a kiss worth waiting for reveals unexpected tenderness. Cinder's journey is perhaps the most complex, as she struggles with the moral implications of her lunar gift. Her ability to control others, the very power that makes Lavanna so dangerous, tempts her when she forces Adria to admit wrongdoing or when she drives Sybil to madness. These moments force her to confront difficult questions. Can she use these abilities without becoming like her aunt? Is it possible to be both powerful and compassionate? Her decision to embrace the role of revolutionary rather than princess represents her choice to define herself by her actions rather than her birthright. Even secondary characters make pivotal choices that redefine their stories. Wolf chooses loyalty to Scarlet and Cinder over his programming as a lunar operative. Dr. Erland chooses to reveal his paternity to Cress and sacrifice himself to protect others from his infection. Princess Winter chooses madness over using her glamour to control others. Meyer's reimagining of these fairy tales suggests that our strength comes not from magical gifts or royal bloodlines, but from the choices we make in moments of crisis. True heroism isn't about being the strongest or most beautiful, but about choosing compassion over cruelty, sacrifice over self-interest, and truth over comfortable lies. By placing these classic characters in a science fiction setting, Meyer strips away the magical solutions of fairy tales, forcing her characters and readers to confront a complex moral challenges of the real world. As Cress concludes with Cinder's declaration that she will start a revolution, we understand that the true revolution has already begun, not just against Lavanna's tyranny, but against the limiting roles and expectations that confine us all. In this way, Meyer's story becomes more than entertainment. It becomes an invitation to consider how we might rewrite our own stories, choosing courage over comfort and connection over isolation.